So preface that by saying, the whole topic of the Last Judgment and what it was and how it happened is a huge topic. My plan is to just touch on some very general teachings about the Last Judgment that kind of help us with our theme for this week, which is Behold, I Make All Things New. So if you do bring something up that I feel like is, oh boy, that's just a tangent I don't want to go down right now, I apologize in advance for saying, talk to me after the class or the elective, and I'm happy to go into that in more detail. So having said that, our topic this Jacob's Creek is, of course, Behold, I Make All Things New. And as I was studying, As I was studying and reading up about what this means, I see Roy going back and maybe trying to help with that a little bit. Is that a speaker?
Yes.
Maybe I'm pointing towards. Okay. Hello? Good? That's better. So as I was reading up and kind of looking into what exactly the Lord meant and means by this beautiful phrase, Behold, I Make All Things New, I started being more and more interested in the fact that so many passages went into the question of why the Lord waited to reveal these things until he did. We all know that Swedenborg was called and these new doctrines were revealed in the middle of the 18th century. And the question is, why did the Lord wait until then? And of course, if you know anything about New Church doctrine, many of these passages point to this idea that the Lord could not reveal these new things for the church until the Last Judgment had been accomplished. So in a sense, that's what I wanted to talk to and discuss a little bit today, is why the Lord had to wait until the Last Judgment had been accomplished before he revealed these new things.
That's an oxymoron, because you had to have the part of the writings written before you...
Oh, see, that's exactly one of those tangents. See, but that's a great question. I was talking to my father-in-law about that very question, and I ended up by saying, but I hope nobody brings that up, because so thank you, Uncle Vance. Why did I begin that way? So that's what I want to talk about. I'm hoping that the end of this as well, we'll have a little bit of time just to reflect on why it's important to even understand the answer to this question. Because I think it actually really is really important to understand the answer to this question. If we do, we can appreciate all the more these new things that the Lord has now offered to us and benefit from them as well. So having said that, let me start by going back for a minute to the Lord's first advent and reminding us of a very, very important point that I think we sometimes don't give enough time thinking about. When the Lord came into this world, when he was first born, just over 2,000 years ago, the Lord, we are told, came to establish a new Christian church, all things of which would be internal, we're taught. So before the Lord came into this world, there was a church that really had become completely external. It was based on mere external rituals and sacrifices and things like that. And so when the Lord came into this world, he came to establish a church that would now be internal. It would focus on more internal things like love to the Lord, right? And love to the neighbor, internal things like that. And yet, even as the Lord was in this world, working to establish this new Christian church, I find it very fascinating that at that moment, he knew, because he foresaw, that this church he was now forming would eventually fall spiritually. Even before he formed it, he was aware that the Christian church eventually was going to fall spiritually. The writings give a lot of explanations in terms of why it fell spiritually. I think the most well-known and probably the most widespread in the doctrines is that idea that the Christian church eventually fell because they turned away from charity to the things of faith alone. And because they turned away from charity and to the things of faith alone, we're taught that the Christian church eventually became very external itself, and they eventually corrupted or falsified many of their doctrines, including the doctrine of the Lord, which we've already heard a little bit about I guess this morning from Derek. So, again, very interesting that the Lord knew as he was establishing this church that eventually it was going to fall. And if you read the Gospels, he predicted this. He predicted this even as he was forming the church. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. He knew that would happen even as he was establishing the Christian church. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. The Lord knew, before he even established this Christian church, that it would eventually fall. And of course, Derek mentioned this morning, the entire book of Revelation, even though people didn't realize this is what it was about when it was written, is about that eventual fall of the Christian world that the Lord was predicting very soon after his advent into this world. So, even more interesting, I find, is that because the Lord knew that the Christian church was eventually going to fall, when he was forming this church, he purposefully chose not to reveal all of the internal truths to this church that he could have. So the Lord could have come and revealed even more when he first came into this world, but he decided to hold back because he knew that this church would eventually fall and therefore profane, says, the things he would have or could have revealed. And so you see this, for example, in the fact that even though he was trying to establish this new internal church, the Lord still chose to speak to these people a lot in parables, right? We have this beautiful example of this that I'll just read for you. This is from Matthew 13. And the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered and said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive, for the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed.'" And this is so interesting. "Lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them." So again, the writings explain this passage by pointing out that, you know, even with the disciples, who it says that he revealed, well, some more internal things about the mysteries of heaven to them, still he didn't reveal much to the disciples. A lot of what he said he spoke in parables. Yeah?
What makes us different than them?
Yeah. Great question. Can I hold off on that? Because we're going to get to that, I think, eventually in the presentation. So that's a good question. Now, another passage related to this from the Heavenly Doctrines that I've always loved, it's one of my favorite, Arcana Celestia 4689. And if you haven't heard this passage before, pay attention to this because it's a great one. It says, "Not a single person from the Christian world knew that the Lord's human is divine, and scarcely anyone knew that he alone rules heaven and the universe, still less that his divine human is the all in heaven. That this is so could not be openly revealed, because it was foreseen by the Lord that the Christian church would turn away from charity to faith. Consequently, that they would separate, or it would separate itself from him, and so not only reject, but also profane the holy which is from his divine human. For faith separate from charity cannot do otherwise." I always find that one so interesting because we often talk, or at least I do in the new church with various people about, you know, well, boy, the Lord in various spots in the New Testament made it kind of clear that he and the Father were one, right? That he was the one God of heaven and earth. He said to James, was it? That I and the Father are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. But other places, he could have said it a little more clearly maybe. Well, this passage says that on purpose, the Lord chose not to make it as clear as he could that he was indeed the one God of heaven and earth and that his human was divine, because he foresaw that the church would have eventually profaned this beautiful and powerful teaching. All right? So any kind of general questions about that before we move on?
Also,
general, yep.
Also, when he said that, he wasn't divine yet. He hadn't fully glorified.
Good point. Yeah, there was still a process he was going through before he could truly show himself as being one with the Father. All right. So really important here, just to sort of set the stage for what I want to move into now. When the Lord established the first Christian church, he knew when he was establishing it that it would eventually fall. He therefore did not reveal fully the divine truths that he could have revealed. And again, even as he was establishing that first Christian church, therefore, he prophesied that someday he would come again. And of course, this is where we get these beautiful passages we're very familiar with in the new church. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. However, when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth. And then, of course, from Matthew, the sign of the Son of Man will then appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and then they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Right? So again, these prophecies about a time when he would come again and then reveal the fullness of what he had come to reveal. So questions, thoughts about that? Going once? Great. So understanding this, now I want to move on to a presentation that basically the Lord himself has given us in a wonderful little book called The Continuation of the Last Judgment. Now, have you all heard of this book before? Have you heard of the book The Last Judgment? To clarify, The Last Judgment was a book that was published in the year 1758. There is another little book called The Continuation of the Last Judgment, a published work that was published in 1763, so about 5 years after The Last Judgment. In this book called The Continuation of the Last Judgment, the Lord provides us with six chapters or six sections that I want to kind of just take us through now that, again, help us understand why the Lord revealed these new teachings when he did. And I think this is going to get a little bit to the answer to your question you had earlier, okay? So again, for the rest of this presentation, I'm going to just take us through these six sections, six chapters that the Lord provides us with in this wonderful little book called The Continuation of the Last Judgment. Now that first section, the first chapter, is called What is Understood by the Former Heaven and the Former Earth Which Passed Away. I'll put you on the spot here. Does anybody want to attempt to give us all a 20-second definition of what the former heaven and the former earth is? Have you heard that phrase before?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, good. Then somebody did my readings. Good. Elsewhere, these former heavens are sometimes called the first heavens that have passed away, from Revelation chapter 21. Elsewhere, these heavens are sometimes called the false heavens, which is interesting. So what is understood by the former heaven and the former earth which has passed away? That's the first section in this great book called The Continuation of the Last Judgment. So let me just offer a few of the quotes here. We read, congregations of spirits are meant who had made seeming heavens between heaven and hell for themselves. And because all spirits and angels dwell upon lands as well as men, therefore by the former heaven and the former earth, these are meant. It was called heaven because they who were in it dwelt on high, forming societies upon rocks and mountains, and living in delights similar to natural ones, but still not in any that were spiritual. And then one more passage here. It is moreover to be known that this heaven, which is called the first heaven, did not consist of any who had lived before the Lord's coming into the world, but all of them were from those who lived after his coming. All right? So a little confusing, but the writings talk about this idea of these false heavens or these first heavens that were formed in the world of spirits. All right? They were formed between heaven and hell from the time that the Lord came into this world all the way up to the time of the last judgment, which happened in the middle of the 18th century. So from the time the Lord came into this world, from the time to the time the last judgment happened in 1757, these imaginary heavens were being formed in the world of spirits. And they were called imaginary heavens because they kind of looked like heaven or felt like heaven to some people. People thought that when they came into them, they were coming into heaven on some level, but they actually weren't heaven itself. They, again, were communities of people that had been built up, my understanding is, in the world of spirits. All right? Questions about that? Thoughts? Yeah?
Is this the souls under the altar?
No. No. I actually did a lot of research on this, kind of trying to answer that question for myself. So were these people the souls of the under the altar? I don't know if you've ever heard of that phrase before. There were these souls under the altar. My understanding is that, very briefly here, that the souls under the altar were actually people that were fairly internal. These were people who understood and approached the Lord as the God of heaven and earth. These were people who were living a good life according to the Ten Commandments. And the souls under the altar were people that were therefore taken away and protected from any influence from these people that were making up the false heavens. All right? We're going to talk in a minute about some of what are called the simple good who got connected and mixed up with these false heavens. But my understanding is that the souls under the altar, that was a different group that the Lord kind of just kept away and separate and protected from these false heavens that were being developed. Talk to me afterwards about that. Show me some passages. You might be able to change my mind, but that's my understanding.
They also
referred
to as the lower earth.
Yeah. So that's, I believe, the lower earth, the souls under the altars. That's kind of the same group. So, but good question. I actually had a slide on that and I took it out just because that's one of those kind of tangential things that we could go down into. Derek?
Something that just occurred to me is maybe those groups were also a protection for those false heavens from what was below.
Say that again.
Maybe they were a barrier from hell below for those people in the false heavens.
Oh, interesting. They were like a buffer almost for the hells that were trying to influence too much from below. Interesting thought.
Just occurred to me.
Yep.
No,
no.
Chase that out.
Yep. So that's just sort of in chapter one of the continuation of the Last Judgment. He touches on kind of just in general. So what were these false heavens? They were, again, these areas between heaven and hell. So I guess in the world of spirits that appeared to be heaven, but they weren't. Nope. I think those are different. Those are different still, because what we're going to see here in a minute, who and what manner of people they were in the former heavens and the former earth. So what were the kinds of people that were forming these false heavens? And we're going to see here in a minute that they were bad dudes. They were corrupt people, leaders in the church who were using the things of the church to manipulate and dominate over other people. My understanding is that in that beautiful, memorable relation you're talking about, that was more a kind of area of instruction, that these were kind of, what would you call them, false ideas of heavens that people were being led through to teach them and to help inspire them to understand what the true nature of heaven was. But I don't think that was the same as these false heavens that had developed again over the centuries and over the time since the Lord's first advent. But you're asking all the right questions. These are all things that popped up in my mind over the last several weeks looking at this. So let's move on now to the question. This is, again, chapter 2 in the book, the continuation of the Last Judgment. So who and what manner of people they were in the former heaven and the former earth? So who was making up these false heavens? You know, who was doing this? They were those who had lived in the world in external and not in internal holiness, who were just and sincere for the sake of civil and moral laws, but not for the sake of divine laws. Therefore, who were external or natural, and not internal or spiritual people, who also were in the doctrinals of the church and were able to teach them, although they were not in a life according to them, and who filled various offices and did uses, but not for the sake of those uses. This heaven, therefore, was such as the world and churches upon earth, among those who do good, not because it is good, but because they fear the laws and the loss of fame, honor, and gain. They who do good for no other origin, do not fear God but men, nor do they have any conscience. So right there, my understanding is that these false heavens were basically made up of what you might call hypocrites. These false heavens were made up of people who were externally living good lives. They were externally maybe even living moral lives. But internally they were evil. So there was a discrepancy between their internal and their external state. There's another fascinating set of passages that refer to the people in these false heavens, the people who formed these false heavens, as being what is referred to as Babylon in the Old and New Testament. All right, and let me just read this passage for you as well, and then I'll see if people have any questions about this. It says, "By Babylon are meant all who wish to have dominion by religion." To have dominion by religion is to have dominion over men's souls, thus over their very spiritual life, and to use the divine things which are in their religion as the means. All right, so this is really important. The people that were making up these false heavens were not just people who had a love of dominion and wanted to control other people. These were people who had a love of dominion and who were using the things of the church in order to gain that dominion over other people. All right, so the passage goes on. "It should be known that the church becomes Babylonia when charity and faith cease and the love of self begins to rule in their place. For this love, in proportion as it is unchecked, rushes on, aiming to dominate not merely over all who it can subject to itself on earth, but even over heaven. Nor does it rest there, but it climbs to the very throne of God and transfers to itself his divine power." All right? So questions about this? So who these people were again? These were bad people. These were people who were living maybe what appeared to be good external lives, but internally they had this evil love of dominion that they were using the things of the church in order to try to use. Yeah.
I just keep going back to, why couldn't the Lord have kept better order?
Great question. Why didn't the Lord kind of deal with these people before 1757? We're going to get to that in the next chapter. He deals with that. Right, that's right. No, great question. And he's going to deal with that very question in a minute. I got to read this last one. Sorry, I'm just reading a lot here. But this passage just kind of gives me the chills in terms of what these people were doing who were forming these false heavens, what these wicked people were doing. And this passage points out that one of the ways these people were trying to gain this dominion over the people of the church is they were doing everything in their power to keep the Lord's word away from the people. They were doing everything that they could in the Christian world at one point when it had fallen to keep the word away from the people and to insert themselves in the place of God in front of the people of the church. Think about some of the teachings, if you know them, about you know, the not so flattering things the writings say about how the Catholic Church came to a point where they decided to make the Pope a person, the vicar of Christ on earth. Now you're no longer going to God himself, you're going to this vicar of Christ on earth. Think about the fact that, you know, back in the Dark Ages, back in the earlier centuries, the word was not written in a language that the common people could understand. You know, if you wanted to know what was written in the word, come to me, the priest. I'll tell you. I have as the priest, have the power to absolve you of your sins, right? If you come and confess them to me and give me some money as well and do all these other things. So you could see all sorts of ways, even in this world. But this passage is actually talking about what was happening in these false heavens, of how, again, these corrupt people in the church who had this love of dominion were doing everything they could to keep people away from the word and to keep people away from the Lord. So let me just read it here. They not only adulterate and falsify the word, but even take it away from the people, lest they should enter into the smallest light of truth. And not satisfied with this, they moreover annihilate it, acknowledging the divine in the decrees of Rome, superior to the divine in the word, so that they exclude all from the way to heaven. For the acknowledgement of the Lord, faith in him, and love to him are the way to heaven. And the word is what teaches the way. Whence it is that without the Lord, by means of the word, there is no salvation. They strive, and this is again these corrupt, power-hungry people, they strive with all diligence to extinguish the light of heaven, which is from divine truth, in order that ignorance may exist in the place of it. And I love this. The denser the ignorance, the more acceptable it is to them. So they just want to extinguish this light from the word. Turn your focus away from the Lord so that now I can have the power over you and not the Lord and his word. Obviously, a danger we have to, I think, watch out for in the new church even as well. I was just going there. So, thank you. Your check's in the mail. Any guess why on this slide I have a picture? And I tried to hide his face because I don't want to get personal here. But I think that's the current Pope, right? Is that so? And again, he might be a nice guy, so I'm not getting personal here. But any guesses of why I decided with this slide to have a picture of the Catholic priest blessing the wine of communion? Yeah, very, very interesting to me. One of the things the writings point out is that I don't know enough about church history to know when, but at some point, the church ceased giving wine to people as part of Holy Communion. They only gave them the bread. And while they don't even realize the correspondence of what is going on there, the writings say that that actually happened as a direct correspondence to the fact that they had taken the word away from the people, which is so, so interesting to me. Again, it's not like they sat down and said, hey, we're taking the word away from the people. Maybe we should take the wine out of the Holy Supper. But via correspondences and providence, lo and behold, after they started taking the word away from the people, they woke up one day and, isn't that interesting? The wine's no longer offered to the people in the Holy Supper. Yes, and I think they blessed it, and the idea was that I'll drink the wine. And again, just thinking about that a little bit from correspondence, you could just it oozes of corruption. Again, I as the priest am up here to drink the wine for you, lay people. You can have some of the bread, but come to me if you want to understand what this is all about. So,
Matthew?
Yes. It's been a while, but yeah.
The power of the government took away the written word.
Oh, perfect. Same thing.
Completely, because then they could substitute anything they wanted.
Exactly the same thing.
You know, but also, there's a twist to not letting the medieval people read the Bible. Well, of course they couldn't read. It wasn't the church's fault, so the church put pictures in the window.
Oh, yeah, good point, yep.
So they could teach
biblical stories, at least.
People that couldn't read.
Yeah.
So they just turned it around as a benefit to the
yep.
people instead of teaching them how to
read. Oh, good observation. It reminds me, too, I didn't give you the numbers on this, but in the book, Last Continuation of the Last Judgment and Last Judgment, there are all sorts of great passages. Read the whole book if you ever get a chance. It's short. That talk about how these corrupt, power-hungry people in the false heavens, how they got together in councils, where they just sat together and came up with all sorts of beautifully worded, man-made doctrines to try to control the people more and more. So I just imagine this dark room where there's people are just sitting down together saying, okay, so how can we get more control over these people? Ooh, how about we write this in the laws? And ooh, how about we take the word away from them in this way? Stephen?
And just to make it even worse in some ways, I'm
yep.
just, it could be like thinking they have the best of intentions.
Oh, sure.
The lay people, they get confused if they read the word. We know better than they do. It's for their own good. We just want to help.
Right. Now, I assume you're saying that wasn't their motive, though.
No, I'm saying that very well could be there. They could be thinking.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Misguided thinking that the Lord, we can't trust the Lord to teach the people because the people are going to get confused.
Right.
We have the people's best interest at heart, but we are the ones who are smarter than the Lord is in terms of I mean, not even thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
The people are too dumb to be able to get it directly from the Lord. We're going to have to do it for them.
For them.
But in effect, putting themselves in the Lord's place.
In the Lord's place.
With telling themselves they've got good intentions.
Almost fooling themselves into thinking this is okay to do. Max? I just wish I knew more church history to answer that.
Then if writing starts showing up, if you're the leader for the group of people and writing starts showing up, that's going to be a weird thing to experience.
Yeah, no, you're right. I wish I knew more to speak to that in terms of just how, you know, when those oral traditions were and when they were replaced with actually the written word and things like that. That'd be an interesting thing to look into. Right. No, absolutely.
Well, the scribes. Scribes again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of these ones that I'm going to just say, let's move on from it, because I think that's one of those big, very interesting, but I'll have to think about that once more. Now, let's move on here, because this next point is really, really important. So these false heavens were developing, right? We've been talking about how, in general, they were formed actually from some people that had this corrupt love of dominion, and that's why they were forming these false heavens. But there was a problem in that these false heavens were in some ways fooling what the writings call the simple good. All right? And this is really important. So remember that we talked about how the people forming these false heavens were living good external lives, right? They were living relatively good moral lives. It was their internal state that really was corrupt and had this love of dominion. Well, because of this, we're told that there were some good, simple spirits who were actually attracted to these people. Because, wait, aren't they living good lives? And so that these false heavens, my understanding is that they became inhabited by not just all these corrupt people that were, you know, struggling with this love of dominion, but the simple good also began to inhabit these false heavens over the years, because again, they were in some ways being fooled because they were simple. Let me just read this passage. There were many reasons, and this goes to, I think, somebody's question, maybe yours, about, so why didn't the Lord get rid of these earlier? Here's the answer. There were many reasons why such societies or such heavens were tolerated. The principal reason was that by external holiness and by external sincerity and justice, they were actually conjoined with the simple good, who were either in the lowest heaven or were still in the world of spirits and not yet introduced into heaven. This, by the way, refers to this idea that in other places it talks about how these false heavens were actually reaching their way up into the realm of some of the lower heavens. All right, so that's this idea that They were conjoined with the simple good who were either in the lowest heaven or were still in the world of spirits and not yet introduced into heaven. For in the spiritual world, there is a communication and thence a conjunction of all with their like. And the simple good in the lowest heaven and in the world of spirits look principally to externals, yet are not interiorly evil. Wherefore, if these spirits, the ones, the bad ones that made up the false heavens, had been forcibly removed from them before the appointed time, heaven would have suffered in its ultimates. So I don't claim to say that that answers your whole question, but there's this fascinating general, it's a start. That, okay, here were these false heavens. Why didn't the Lord just say, hey, get out of here. Ping, there they go. Well, the problem was that there were these good people mixed in with these false heavens. So if the Lord, before it was time to do it and before he was ready, were to just get rid of those false heavens and cast them into the hells, he would have ended up damaging and doing harm to these simple spirits as well. The parable of the wheat and tares, that's why I have this picture here, is what this is all about. The Lord tells that fascinating parable about, you know, you can't just start pulling up the tares when the wheat is mixed in with it and then kind of tender. Otherwise, you're going to destroy the wheat till as well. You got to wait till both have been grown up. Wait till the time of the last judgment. And then this separation can happen, and which we're going to get to in a minute. And we can clear up this mess of false heavens that had been forming. In some ways, yes. Yep, the Lord doesn't just, you can't, there's a great phrase that says you cannot turn an owl of the night into a dove overnight. You know, the Lord can't just form you into an angel like that, otherwise you would be destroyed. It's got to be bit by bit. I think I'm going to skip this one for time's sake, but maybe this is a little bit, Stephen, to your point as well. Interestingly, you know, some of the passages in the Last Judgment and in the continuation of the Last Judgment point out that because these people who were in this evil love of dominion were actually in good externals. And because they kind of cared about their reputation, because they wanted to be able to control people, right? I can't control you unless you respect me. That the Lord still was able to actually use them to instruct the good. It says there at the very end, underlined, thus they were able to lead many to a good life and therefore into the way of heaven. So that's sort of this principle that even if you've got a wicked priest, it says in other places in the Word, the Lord can actually use wicked people to lead people to a good end. Why? Because a lot of wicked people really care about their reputation. So I'm a horrible person. I don't really care that you guys get to heaven, but I want you to like me. So I'm still going to try to do a really good presentation for you that's going to help you so I can look good. And you pat me on my back and say, oh, good job, Matthew, and I can go away feeling nice about myself. Thank you. Okay, class dismissed. No. Okay, we're gonna we're gonna move quicker here. We got about 15 minutes here. So, point number three in continuation of the Last Judgment really now gets to the whole reason, you know, I wanted to talk about this given our theme, Behold, I Make All Things New. So, point number three then goes on to say, before the Last Judgment was effected upon them, a great part of the intercourse between heaven and earth, and thus between the Lord and the church, was interrupted. This fits in so perfectly to the fact that a solar eclipse is coming up at the end of August, I believe. We're lucky enough that we're going to be in Myrtle Beach, and we're going to be right where it's going to be, so we're going to get to go see this, which should be fun. But continuation of the Last Judgment, number 11. All enlightenment comes to a person from the Lord through heaven, and it enters by an internal way. So long as there were congregations of such spirits between heaven and the world, or between the Lord and the church, these false heavens, people could not be enlightened. It was as when a sunbeam is cut off by a black interposing cloud, or as when the sun is eclipsed and its light arrested by the interjacent moon. Wherefore, if anything had been then revealed by the Lord, either it would not have been understood, or if understood, still it would not have been received, or if received, still it would afterwards have been suffocated. So in some ways, this is, you know, one of the main points I wanted to make this afternoon. So because these false heavens had developed in the world of spirits, these false heavens had the effect of blocking, literally blocking the influx of the Lord from heaven into the church on earth. And because this influx was being blocked, we read here that if the Lord decided, hey, here are all things new. Behold, I make all things new. Here are the heavenly doctrines. And he had presented them in the year 1756. And this goes back to his brilliant question, though. The Arcana was written before then, though. But ignore that for now. If the Lord had revealed all these new things before the last judgment had happened, there is simply no way in the world the church on earth would have received them. You know, even in the world today, we talk about how relatively few people seem to be receiving the writings for the new church and this beautiful new doctrine. But if he had tried to reveal it before the last judgment had happened, these false heavens would have made it so that nobody would have received these things in their hearts and minds. They would have been rejected outright. I think Derek here? I think Derek threw up this passage this morning about equilibrium as well. There are many reasons why the last judgment exists when the end of the church is. The principal reason is that then the equilibrium between heaven and hell begins to perish. And with the equilibrium, man's freedom itself. When man's freedom perishes, he can no longer be saved, for he cannot then be led to heaven in freedom. But from freedom is born to hell. For no one can be reformed without freedom. And all a person's freedom is from the equilibrium between heaven and hell. So again, going back to this idea, where is it? Before the last judgment was effected upon them, a great part of the intercourse between heaven and earth, and thus between the Lord and the church, was interrupted. And that is why the Lord could not reveal these new doctrines before he had dealt with these false heavens and accomplished this last judgment in the world of spirits. Questions about that? Because that's important. Or thoughts, Dara?
Might not be quite related.
That's all right. You sure? I'll say, talk to me later if it's too unrelated. So go ahead. Yeah?
All right.
Go. Right?
Sounds like, it just sounds like, weren't there people like that before the Lord came on earth? Because it said that these didn't happen before the Lord came on earth. So what?
Great question.
Great question, and let
me do a little research after that. I believe the answer to your question is, interestingly, it did happen before the Lord's advent. There have been several last judgments. So that's the crux, I think, of the answer to your question. But that is, yeah, that's a big tangent that I don't want to go down, but that's a great question. So to answer very quickly again, before the Lord came into this world, there were other false heavens growing up in the world of spirits that the Lord kind of did away with at his first coming. After his coming into this world, it kind of happened all over again. And again, we can ask, well, why did it happen in steps like this? And why did it happen before? Is it going to happen again? The answer is no. But don't ask me why right now. Right. It has to do with the establishing of the three heavens and with each of three judgments that have happened over the history of the human race, the three heavens were established. So with this final judgment that has taken place now at the end of the Christian church, the natural heaven has now been established, and all of the heavens are now in order. So a fourth judgment, as it were, will never take place. But talk to me later about details if you want, because that's a great question, actually. Okay, 10 more minutes here. Let me catch up on my notes. So really no questions about that? Makes sense, though? Why, again, the writings, these new things were not revealed until the last judgment, because this cloud existed that would have prevented them from being received. Max?
The number of people who are actually reading on their own is probably off the scale different
Yeah, and I almost wonder if that's in part an aspect of the second coming now having happened. Now that people can receive these doctrines and will, and that cloud has been pushed to the side and people have this new freedom of thought we're going to end with here in just a minute, that in his providence, people are reading more now because they're able to receive this stuff and think about it and understand it. Brad?
Well, I think also a big part we'll look at a little bit in my presentation tomorrow is just that whole concept of the macrocosm, the human race developing in maturity from childhood.
Good, yeah.
Different times there was different levels of truth that were appropriate to the human race.
At the time, yeah, good. Yeah, that reminds me too that whenever I have a question I don't want to answer, I can just say, Brad's going to address that tomorrow, or Brett will address that on Wednesday. Derek, one more and then let's move on so I can finish up.
Just quickly, I wanted to comment that one of the realities that the Reformation brought with was universal education. Mm.
Yeah.
So that was something that preceded the Last Judgment in which a written revelation could be more universally received.
Yeah, and useful to people. Cool. Okay, now I'm going to jump through this one. This could be a series of classes. So remember, the previous point was that point number three was that before the Last Judgment was effected upon them, a great part of the intercourse between heaven and earth, and thus between the Lord and the church, was interrupted. Point number four in the continuation of the Last Judgment is that the continuation between the communication between heaven and the world, or between the Lord and the church, it's been restored. And in this section, he just talks about the fact that the Last Judgment has now happened. We could talk for hours about how it happened, how the Lord separated the good from the evil in these false heavens, how the Lord eventually cast out these false heavens from the world of spirits, and so many other beautiful, rich teachings about how this Last Judgment happened. But for now, I'll just read this simple summary passage. It was granted me, this is Swedenborg speaking, to see from beginning to end how the Last Judgment was accomplished, and also how Babylon, these false heavens, was destroyed. Also how those who are meant by the dragon were cast into the abyss, and how the new heaven was formed, and the new church instituted in the heavens, which is meant by the new Jerusalem. It was granted me to see all these things with my own eyes, in order that I might be able to testify of them. And I always find it so interesting that the writings give a specific date of when this happened. This Last Judgment was commenced in the beginning of the year 1757 and was fully accomplished at the end of that year. So during a period of about a year, we're told, and again, this could be a series of classes of how it all happened, the time had come for the Lord to abolish these false heavens and to restore order again in the world of spirits, to restore order again in the angelic heavens. Why? So this influx could again come down from heaven and flow all the way down into the Lord's now new church in the world.
If there's no time and space in heaven, why did it take a year to do it?
On to the next slide. thank you, Jamie. Point number five, this is why it is that after the Last Judgment and not before, revelations have been made for the new church. And I love this quote. Since communication has now been restored, because the false heavens are now gone, by the Last Judgment, people can be enlightened and reformed. That is, they can understand the divine truth of the word, receive it when understood, and retain it when received. For the interposing obstacles are removed. And therefore John, after the former heaven and the former earth passed away, said that he saw a new heaven and a new earth. And then the holy city, Jerusalem, descending from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And he heard the one sitting upon the throne say, "Behold, I make all things new." Again, kind of summarizing this idea that, okay, now that the judgment has been accomplished, now I can make all things new, even in the church on earth as well. So this brings us perfectly, we got 6 minutes here, to the last section now in the continuation of The Last Judgment, which in some ways is my favorite. And if you have to read one part of the book, The Continuation of The Last Judgment, go to this section 6 and read it. It's got some fantastic passages in it. So the sixth and final point here. The state of the world and the church before the last judgment was like evening and night, but after it, it was like dawn and a new day. When the light of truth does not appear, the truth is not received. There is a state of the church in the world like evening and like night. So again, that was the state when those false heavens existed. Human freedom was perishing. An influx from the Lord through heaven onto the earth was getting interrupted. But when the light of truth appears and the truth is received, there is a state of the church in the world like morning or like day. And that is, of course, the morning or day that came with the establishment of the Lord's new church on earth. Got two more slides here. In relation to this, let me just read this one. I'd love to hear your reaction to this. This is one of my favorite passages in all of the writings, so let me just read it for you. It says, the state of the world hereafter will be altogether similar to what it has been heretofore. For the great change which has now taken place in the spiritual world does not induce any change in the natural world as to the external form, so that after this there will still be civil affairs as before, there will be peace, treaties, and wars as before, with all other things which belong to societies in general and in particular. But as for the state of the church, this is what will be dissimilar hereafter. It will be similar indeed as to the external appearance, but dissimilar as to the internal. Henceforth, the person of the church will be in a more free state of thinking on matters of faith, thus on the spiritual things which relate to heaven, because spiritual freedom has now been restored to him. Because spiritual freedom has been restored to people, therefore the spiritual sense of the word has now been disclosed, and by it, interior divine truths have been revealed. Again, behold, I make all things new. That's what that's about. So I just love this idea that, you know, hey, yes, the last judgment has happened. Yes, the Lord has now established this new church on earth. But if you want to really see the profound difference that this church is now making in this world, don't look for it necessarily in external things going on in the world around you. Look for it in this new state of spiritual freedom that people now have in the Lord's church. And that's really important. That's what these new truths are here to provide people with and help to foster. Questions about that before I move to the last slide and finish up here?
Spread to the Protestant Catholic churches.
Great, great point. Absolutely. You know, somebody was talking to me about this very point the other day that, you know, Brad's, I think tomorrow's or in worship this morning as well, was talking about how the new church is a special church because we have this written new revelation, right? We've got the heavenly doctrines that we can go to and study and read. And we should recognize what a blessing that is, and we shouldn't apologize for that. And yet, I think because of what this passage says, we can also recognize that even those who don't have the heavenly doctrines per se, they still are affected by this new state of heavenly freedom. And I think that's really important for us to understand. That doesn't mean that we should not care about evangelizing to them, and it wouldn't be better for them to also have the written revelation we have in the heavenly doctrines, but if you don't have that written revelation, you're still benefiting in some way from this new spiritual light that the Lord is now providing for the earth because he's cleared up the world of spirits and gotten rid of those false heavens, if that's a little bit what you're getting to. So very important point. And that's, I think, why you see that. You will see in churches around the world, you sometimes go, huh, they seem to have something of the writings there almost, or you know, things are happening around the world, even with people who don't have the writings, that seem to be positive and moving in the right direction. So with 1 minute left, let me just end with a quick thought on why this is so important to think about. Why is it, why can't we just talk about the new things? Why even bother having an hour discussion where we look at the fact that these new things have only been able to come after the last judgment has happened? Is this what I want to end with? Yes, this is my last slide. Yes, it is. Sorry, I'm confusing myself. Is this what I wanted? Yes, the last judgment 74. Okay, so why is this so important? Well, a lot of the time when I talk to people about the new church, people who are not new church, just Catholics, Protestants, Christians, other Christians, it's interesting to me that often the conversation, for them at least, comes around to this idea that in the end, we're all waiting. We're all waiting for this day called the Last Judgment when all these beautiful and wonderful things will happen to the world. And, we'll all be, the new heaven and the new earth will then come and it'll be all wonderful. And it struck me recently that that's kind of a depressed way to think about the world, that our job is to just wait. That's kind of what it comes down to for a lot of Christians. Live a good life, believe that Jesus died for your sins, but really the good stuff, it's coming, I don't know when, 100 years, when this last judgment happens, the Lord comes again. If we can just survive till then, that's when the good stuff's going to come. But it strikes me that one of the beautiful messages that we can offer people in the new church is that that time is now. No more waiting in the new church. And I love this last passage that says, I've had various conversations with angels concerning the state of the church hereafter. They know that the slavery and captivity in which the person of the church was formerly has now been taken away. Again, it's not going to happen in the future. Now's the time. It's been taken away. And that now, from restored freedom, he can better perceive interior truths if he wills to perceive them. And thus, he can be made more internal if he wills to become so. So again, in my mind at least, just sort of understanding the bigger context here, that these new truths are now being offered because the second coming has actually been accomplished now. The last judgment has happened. We're not waiting for it anymore. Can really put us into a state of mind that, it's time. It's time to accept these truths and become the kind of people that the Lord created us all to become. And I think that's kind of one of the ideas in my mind of what makes this concept so important. And I guess I just end with inviting you to imagine how the Christian world as a whole would change if they simply came to this simple realization that the last judgment's happened now, right? The second coming has happened. So let's stop waiting and let's get on with it, if you will. So I'll take one question, then we got to close up.
So that means we all need to take responsibility for what we do. We can't just stand here.
Great. Absolutely. And that's maybe the best note to end it on. So yeah, it's kind of inspiring, but it's also a challenge. It's like, oh, wait a minute. No more excuses, guys. Guess what? If you will to, you can perceive them. If you will to, you can become so now. So, get off your you-know-what and start working. Vance, and then we'll end it.
There's a series of articles in New Church Life, seven of them, by Reverend Dr. Hugo Odner, that covers this from beginning to end.
Cool.
Every word you said
nice.
Is in that series and a lot more.
Nice. It's beautiful.
If you want to know more about it,
yep. And I would say, and again, please, go home. I'm going to check up on all of you. Read The Last Judgment and the continuation of The Last Judgment. It's this big. You can read it in a night. A long night, but you can do it in a night. Thank you all very much.